This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
We are joined in the studio by Matthew Wade from Star Observer to tell us about all things.
In person. Good morning to you, Matthew.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
So you do a couple of things here at Joy, Matt.
Yeah. So it's kind of changed over the last couple of years or so, but I obviously package together the Q&N package for the Community Radio Network. I help out with The Informer sometimes as well. And sometimes if other people need me to step in to do some news headline stuff, yeah, I do that as well.
Great.
And your full-time job is as editor for Star Observer.
Yes. And I'm here by myself in Melbourne. So the team are primarily obviously up in Sydney. So have the reins down here in Melbourne, which I'm obviously biased because I live here, but I think is a really good thing because in my opinion, my very modest opinion, I think Melbourne and Victoria are very much leading the way when it comes to LGBTI stuff. So yeah, it's great to be here.
Should I declare my interest now, Macca?
Yes.
I'm a shareholder.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I'm one of your 50 shareholders.
Amazing, yeah.
I know. I think it's amazing too.
I should meet more of them because I know that there are a few here in Melbourne. I know I've met a few friends of mine that I know are shareholders as well. But yeah, that's fantastic.
I'm not even sure how that happened, but there you go. And every now and then I sort of call the office and say, hey, can I have a look at an annual report? Pass that on.
No, I will, yeah. Noted.
You probably found it in a back room somewhere, Taz.
No, look, I do know how it happened. When I was here at Joy, five, 6 years ago, we were hosting an event with Star Observer. It was a community engagement event.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And I spoke to the then CEO who said, oh, yeah, we've got a spare share floating about. So I was like, okay, I'll buy it.
Fantastic. That's amazing.
There you go.
I got a question, Matt. I'll show my cards. I wrote for MCV. It'd be
20 years ago?
12 years ago.
Yeah.
But I wrote for it for about 10 years.
Wow.
And I know how hard it is, you know, to put together a gay free-to-street paper, you know, to get the content, to lay it out, to get it printed, to get it distributed, to get the advertisers. And I'm sure it hasn't got any easier.
No, probably to the contrary in many respects. I mean, obviously the process is relatively similar. I mean, it's a lot to put together each month. But in terms of the changing climate, obviously LGBTI issues are often now reported on a more mainstream or widely, on a bigger platform. So I guess the struggle when it comes to sales and advertising is trying to show why queer-owned media is still relevant, as I'm sure you guys obviously understand even here at Joy as well.
Yeah.
So that's probably the main thing I think that is a shifting climate that we kind of need to adjust to. In terms of stories, though, I think that's our strong suit. And it's the same with Joy as well. I mean, I'm sure I'm probably preaching to the converted, but I think what sets us apart and same with Joy and other queer press is that obviously, I mean, we report on a wide breadth of issues that a lot of mainstream press doesn't pick up on, you know. I mean, I think obviously at the moment marriage equality is the hot button topic, but even outside of that, you know, I think it's always going to be necessary and important to have queer-owned press by queer people for queer people, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. I mean, occasionally I read in the mainstream press stories about queer issues and, yeah, it might be the language isn't quite right or it maybe misses out on some of the, some of the letters in our acronyms or some of the nuancing isn't right or it's written in a way which is a little bit voyeuristic as well.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's actually not representing our voice necessarily.
It's true, and I've actually lost count of the amount of times that I've been interviewing, say, a trans or gender diverse person and they've kind of said, oh, look, you know, I'm glad that we're chatting with queer press or queer media because when we chat to someone from, you know, say, a mainstream outlet, they misgender us or they don't actually know the proper language to use. And that's obviously maybe just a lack of education or awareness on those issues. But I think, there's something a bit more, maybe authentic is the wrong word, but quite important about actually hearing about queer issues and LGBTI news from people within that community.
Oh, I think authentic is the right word. For me, it's about authenticity and respect.
Mm-hmm.
So Matthew, Mac and I have been ranting on about marriage equality for some time. So, I mean, during the course of the week, the other big issue, we've already talked about the Anglican Church's donation. We've talked about
They've got blood on their hands.
Yeah, okay. We've talked about a number of other issues, but the one that we haven't talked about is Senator Matt Canavan.
Oh, God, he and shall not be named yet.
Well, I mean, yeah, just remind our listeners what happened. On Monday night at Q&A,
So one of the audience members kind of raised with Matt specifically, or directly, I should say, about... I guess Matt kind of was very critical recently of, I think it was Westpac who kind of disseminated a flyer to a lot of their staff, encouraging them to vote yes. And on that flyer it said, you know, it kind of listed a particular statistic, which was false, actually. It turned out to be false, but it was saying that 3,000 LGBTI people commit suicide every year. The actual statistic is not far off. It's about, I think it's 2,800. But the list of the audience member was kind of saying, oh, you know, why can't we talk about this kind of stuff? And Matt's response was essentially, during this debate or the postal survey process, by talking about suicide statistics, he was calling it a form of blackmail. And I guess the language he used, it was actually ridiculous. Like, I mean, there was a collective groan in the audience because he was like, oh, you know, they wrote that there was 3,000, but there was only 2,800, you know, implying like it was some massive discrepancy. And I don't know. I mean, I'm curious of your thoughts, both of your thoughts as well. But it's interesting because when it comes to this debate, people that are hard no voters that are probably unlikely to ever change their mind, fine, they're not going to change their mind. People that are hard yes voters like you and I, we've got our mind set up. But the people that are kind of in the middle, I feel like some of these more personal human interest things like suicide statistics, mental health rates, I think they're crucial to kind of, you know, enlighten or open people's minds to why it actually is such a critical thing. But yeah, Matt kind of cropped up.
I watched it that night. And,
yeah.
and I have to say, I nearly threw something at the TV. I was actually very angry. How dare he say it's only 2,800, mm-hmm. not 3,000? I mean, one suicide is too many.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Exactly. You know,
In our society, suicide should not be acceptable. It should not be viewed as being something. And I'm not talking about people who choose to die or people who choose to turn off the machine, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, that is very different to suicide. I think suicide is the act of killing yourself for whatever reason is something that we should not accept in our society.
100%, and it's emblematic of obviously larger homophobia in society, but I think there have been countless even medical professionals that have said, you know, passing something like marriage equality, while it may seem small to some, actually can have a large impact because, you know, knowing in society that you have equal legal standing, even in the realm of marriage, can, you know, for a young person in particular who may be feeling quite vulnerable.
Huge impact.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
It's interesting, Matt Canavan... a colleague of his, Nationals MP Trevor Khan, he's called out Matt Canavan on his what he called his cruel comments during this debate. He did it on 3CR. So there are Nationals. Darren Chester is another one who supports marriage equality and quite early and actually had a bit of a fight in his branch.
Oh, right.
Up in Gippsland about it. So, you know, Matt Canavan, Barnaby Jaws and the other people on the no bus, which I think is...
The no bus.
I don't think the bus is full. I think they're struggling. I hope the outcome is what we want, but I think it's important, you know, reporting on the positive stories about marriage equality and why people need to support it. And again, I think the people sitting on the fence, some of those negative comments by politicians and some of the ratbaggery by, you know, people like Lyle Shelton, who we've invited 7 times to come on this show.
Well,
and he won't come on. He's gutless. Because he knows he will be held to account.
You're listening to
Macca. He lies.
And Tass, and we've got Matthew Wade in here as our... Matthew or Matt?
Either's fine. Matthew's fine.
Matthew Wade, who's the editor
of
Star Observer.
Your mother will recognise you. Because there's more.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
So, Matthew, where do you get your stories from?
I guess from a variety of sources, much like yourselves, I imagine. I'm probably going to sound like a bit of a millennial, but often social media is a great source. I mean,
but you seem to get them before anybody else does.
Yeah, I think it's because, I mean, often those stories that people publish on mainstream outlets... I guess, the more big, obvious stories, like, you know, Alan Joyce is donating, you know, $1 million to the Yes campaign, whereas a lot of the more nuanced stories that maybe aren't getting picked up are through networks that we have. You can obviously, we're obviously in the community, we're out there at the events.
So do you have a whole lot of moles out there who just sort of feed you stuff?
Moles.
It sounds more, you make it sound a little more dramatic and exciting, but I think it is like they, people get in touch and obviously just let me know what's going on, and I make sure that I keep those connections relatively strong so that I can see what's going on in different areas.
I find myself like, you know, flicking through social media, looking for stories, looking for what's happening, because it's a great way to actually find things, especially Twitter, I find, to get things that are sort of like of the
breaking
moment.
Yeah, in real time.
And then all of a sudden I see an email's come in through Star Observer with the latest breaking thing, and there's, you know, Matthew Wade sort of breaking another story that I haven't seen anywhere else. And I think, well, how do you do it?
I guess part of it, and this is like probably obvious, but I guess it's, you know, having an idea of what's come up in the, like, for instance, with each issue, we don't always necessarily, but it's relatively, we kind of build each issue around a theme. So, like, for instance, in the month of NAIDOC week, we kind of made it around Indigenous issues. Yep. But because our issue comes out before that month, it kind of means it's coming out in advance. So it kind of is hitting those issues early, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
There's nothing quite exciting as chasing down a story, is there?
It's a massive thrill. I actually love it. That's part of the reason, well, it's almost entirely the reason why I got into journalism back, you know, in uni. Like, I just, it's something really exciting about kind of feeling like you're ready to post it before anyone else. Everyone's going to read it from you first. Like, it's a great feeling.
And the missing pieces in the jigsaw are always, you know, when you get them and you go, yes, that's it.
Exactly.
That's it. I want to ask, one of the stories, we actually covered it a while ago on the show with Neil Mitchell, but the women holding hands on the number 16 tram.
Yeah.
Recognising lesbian history in Australia. It was in the late 70s, and they were charged.
Yeah, it's actually completely ludicrous. Like, I don't know if all the listeners are aware, but yeah, so there were a lesbian couple that were charged for holding hands in public back in, I think it was 1977, which is just, I mean, today it's incomprehensible. It's just so ridiculous. But I guess to mark Victoria's Seniors Festival this year, a group of women decided to board the number 16 tram, as you mentioned, and hold hands as a kind of mark of, well, solidarity, but also just to highlight that it's just to kind of help remind people of the history of lesbophobia, and also just, I guess...
It's hard to imagine.
It's crazy,
Do you mean what?
No, being arrested, two women...
Mm-hmm. For holding hands. Oh, it's bizarre. So were you at the event, by any chance?
I didn't get a chance to go along, but I spoke with Catherine, the organiser, and it seemed like it was a great event. So essentially they obviously boarded the tram, but they also wrote down, they shared their experiences over the length of the tram ride, which I think went from the State Library to St Kilda Town Hall. And I was reading some of those, and they were just beautiful. Like, it was just these, obviously older lesbian women who, you know, had been through all these experiences in their life, and they just kind of wanted to remind broader society, and particularly the LGBTI community, that, you know, the lesbian people in Australia have a really rich and colourful history that extends even beyond, obviously, that, you know, that terrible conviction. But, I thought it was an amazing endeavour.
Sounds great. I'm going to take you back to marriage equality.
Yep.
Tell us what's happening in the no camp.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it changes every day. if there's one thing I can rely on every day or guarantee, is that there's going to be a new person saying something completely sensational and, you know, ridiculous. But in the last week, I guess, early last week, Sydney held a Yes Fest, so a kind of concert for marriage equality, which saw, I think it was like Ricky Lee, John Paul Young. They were performing to help raise funds for the Yes campaign, and I think thousands of people showed up, but also seven no voters showed up, led by, is it Nick Folks from Party for Freedom? So they went along to the event and kind of stood beside the stage with their no signs, and in the lead up to that, they posted a couple of videos on Facebook essentially saying, and in pretty much these words, that they wanted to provoke a reaction. So they were saying, oh, we're going to go down to the concert and see what kind of reaction we get, which to me reads very much like they wanted someone to fight them so that they could obviously use that as ammunition against the Yes campaign.
Oh, then so everybody has to sit there and sort of cross their knees and cross their fingers and try really hard not to say anything.
Well, that's actually what ended up happening. So I think they obviously anticipated that there would be some sort of mini riot when they showed up with their signs, but then later after the event, they posted and said, oh, you know, surprisingly, everyone was okay. No one really, everyone was quite civil was the word they used. But I think we're going to see a lot of that kind of stuff. And even recently, yesterday, I believe it was in Melbourne, just outside of Flinders Street Station, a man was standing on one of the bollards with a big no sign. And so to kind of counter that without obviously getting into some sort of heated argument, a few, I don't know if they were LGBTI people or not, but a few people stood up on the adjacent bollards and held up yes signs as a way to just kind
Good
of...
on them.
Yeah, I can imagine obviously walking out. I keep bringing up, obviously, young people, but I think coming out of Flinders Street Station and seeing someone with a big kind of, you know, red letters, no sign could be quite confronting, but to see, obviously, the solidarity from other people, he was obviously quite outnumbered, but it was, yeah, it was really lovely to see.
Well, they someone paid to have no sky written.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's pretty simple for them. It's the only word they can spell.
But it depends on where you looked at it from.
Because, I know.
Because
it looked to me
a
like,
friend of mine
from
said
Mulgrave,
that he
looked like Al.
Well, a friend of mine saw it and he said it looked like Oz.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And then somebody else looked at it, one of my nephews actually, and said, why are they writing on the sky?
Yes, and they got the N around the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people I saw kind of played around with the picture and kind of edited it to create their own messages, and I loved that. That was the favorite part of it. But the interesting thing, and I'm sure you guys have probably mentioned it here before, but with them writing no in the sky, because I know they've done it in Sydney as well, to me it just kind of emphasizes that they, you know, we had tens of thousands of people show up in Melbourne, in Sydney, thousands in Adelaide, in Brisbane, to kind of champion marriage equality on the yes side. You know, they couldn't, I guess, gather those kind of numbers for some sort of street parade. I mean, the Straight Lives Matter, quote-unquote, rally in Sydney, I think, had under 20 people. So that's why they're kind of taking to the skies, because they can't necessarily, you know...
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember hearing Magda Zubanski speak about this very subject quite recently, and she had read some report which looked at the value of advertising. And the value of advertising from the No Camp was in the vicinity of about $20 million.
Wow.
Compared to the Yes campaign, which she, you know, her sources said that it was more like $2 or $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the figures that she quoted. Hopefully somebody can correct me if I've got that wrong, but I think they're the figures. What I find astonishing is that you know, all that money, all that investment in a campaign, and it seems to be aggravating rather than really causing a tidal wave.
It's true, and I imagine, I mean, I know I'm very biased being part of the community, being a vocal proponent of the Yes Camp, but I think...
I would hope so. We wouldn't have you here otherwise.
It's true. But the thing is, it's like all these people, like the really, the ones that have the high platforms, like the Lyle Sheltons or the Tony Abbotts, you know, even people like Fred Nile, you know, they make these really, I guess, provocative comments. And I wonder how beneficial or how, I guess, useful are they? Like, are they actually changing people's minds? Because I imagine the majority of people hear that and just think, oh, my goodness, like, this, you know, that's ridiculous. Like, obviously, that's not. Yeah. So in terms of advertising, yeah, I don't know how effective it actually is at the end of the day. So, yeah, I think what we're doing is really great. I think the even just as a simple rally, you know, getting thousands of people together just to show that solidarity, I think it makes a huge difference, I should say.
Well, the Yes campaign is very much grassroots oriented. Mm-hmm. It's much more focused on storytelling.
Of course.
And it's focused on personal engagement. Mm-hmm. Now, the message that we've all been told is talk to four of your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, talk to people who you know are yes and make sure they do get their postal survey in. And don't focus on the no voters because you're not going to change their
mind. I do want to, just to hark back to history a little bit, the huge attendance at the rallies, and Matt, you weren't even a twinkle in your father's eye then, but in 1975, when the Governor-General Sack Whitlam and the election campaign that followed, there were huge, huge rallies for Whitlam and for Labor. And I think the campaign was Restore Democracy. And, you know, if you went on the basis of the marches and the campaigns, it was going to be a lay-down misere. It wasn't. The Libs got the biggest majority in history. So it's sometimes, you know, we need to look at what the No case are doing and what traction they're getting. But remember, there's lots of people outside our circle of influence and our friends that might be voting no.
And Makaram, according to one of our listeners, the lovely Brad, he says the no voters actually ran out of money because they forgot to put the W. They didn't have enough money to put the W on the now that they painted in the sky.
No, they couldn't spell now. It was too complex for them. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass. Matt Wade is our guest this morning. Matt does the Informer, he does Q&A, he does all sorts of stuff on Joy.
And he's going to do us regularly, I believe.
Well, he's going to appear on the show. I don't know about doing it.
Well, that's what I meant.
Yes. So hopefully we can have you as a, you know, every fortnight or so, Matt. That'd be great.
I'd love to, yeah.
The paper's really important, both, you know, in print. I love print. Mm-hmm. But online as well. And it's great to have you here and great, you know, that that Star Observer is there.
And same with Joy. I mean, we're covering, I think between us, we're kind of covering nearly every medium, you know. We've got radio, print, online, and, yeah, again, preaching to the converted, but I think, obviously, they're both incredibly vital. So, no, I'm really glad to be here, so thank you.
No, it's a pleasure. So, in case there is someone out there that doesn't know Star Observer's website, what is it?
So, you just jump on the web and type in www.starobserver.com.au. And, yeah, on there you can not only read our online articles but actually read digital e-versions of our magazine, which you can also obviously pick up for free around the place. If you're obviously in Melbourne, Joy's a great place to pick one up. But they obviously have lots of different distribution points which you can check out on our website as well.
Now, here's a difficult question for you.
Okay.
What is the one story that you haven't written that you'd really like to have written, and who is it about?
I was actually thinking about this yesterday, and maybe if I thought about it more, I potentially would come up with something different. But I would really like to write something about the intersection between religion and the gay community, but particularly the Muslim religion in the gay community, because I think that's an intersection that's often overlooked or not really explored very much. I think it'd be interesting to chat to people that are gay and identify as Muslim, people that are maybe, again, initially identified as Muslim and then disavowed it. That's something that I'd actually love to write about.
Well, maybe we could talk more about that on this show, because I think that's a subject that I'm very interested in as well.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Thank you for coming in, Matt.
There's the start.
Great to meet you finally.
Thank you so much. Likewise.
And again, you should always listen to Joy. Pick up Star Observer either in print or online.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.